Many companies that Americans assume are American-owned are actually owned by foreign interests. ANP is owned by German investors, Grand Union by French. One half of National Steel Corporation is owned by a Japanese company. Four of America's top 10 chemical companies are foreign-owned. Foreign investors now hold more than 16% of total U.S. bank assets and own an estimated $100 billion of American real estate. The effects of foreign money on the economic and political climate of the United States is the subject of the new book Buying into America. My guest is Martin Tolchin, who co-authored this book with his wife Susan Tolchin. Martin is a correspondent in the Washington Bureau of the New York Times. I spoke to him from the NPR Bureau in New York. I asked him why so many foreign companies and foreign investors are buying into America now.
This is a very lucrative market. This is the world's most lucrative market. Foreign investors come in here for a variety of reasons to tap into that market, sometimes to acquire U.S. technology, sometimes to destroy American competition. There are a number of reasons, and some of them are in our interests and some of them are not.
With the dollar having taken a nosedive in the past couple of years, is it cheaper now than ever to invest in America?
Absolutely.
Now, you use the analogy in your book at some point that what we're doing in America is selling the roof to pay the mortgage. Let me ask you to explain that analogy.
Well, what we're doing is a great deal of the foreign money is coming in to subsidize our deficit. We are living above our means, and we lust for foreign money. We're greedy for foreign money, and we're taking a lot of that money not to industrialize, not to prepare for the future, but to pay for the present and the past. And I think that's a major difference between the foreign money that's coming into the United States today and the foreign money that came in the last century that really helped us industrialize, helped build the mines, helped build the railroads, helped make America great. It's one thing to use foreign money to build railroads. It's another thing to use it to pay off the national debt.
So you think that we're selling off our resources to get an influx of money now, but then we'll be left without some of these resources and no new money coming in?
Exactly.
Now, you tell a very interesting story at the beginning of your book, the story behind the writing of this book, and it has to do with a conversation you had with Senator Jim Sasser of Texas. Can you tell?
Sure. Senator Sasser told us that in his last reelection campaign, he was opposed by a Republican candidate who had vigorously opposed domestic content legislation. That was a bill that would have required that a certain percentage of all products, large major products such as automobiles, manufactured in this country, sold in this country, be manufactured in this country. And at that point, Senator Sasser had taken no position on the bill. Nissan had opened a factory in Smyrna, Tennessee, and the Nissan executives held fundraisers for his opponent. Now, the Nissan executives pointed out that they are Americans, and as Americans, they should be free to support and finance whatever candidates they choose to finance. However, upon closer examination, it turned out that the Nissan executives in Tennessee did nothing without first consulting the corporate lobbyists in Washington, who in turn consulted the corporate executives in Tokyo. And so you had foreign involvement, basically, in a Senate race, in a U.S. Senate race in Tennessee. And Senator Sasser thought that that was something to be concerned about.
So you're concerned that foreign interests in America are starting to act as lobbies and starting to back election campaigns. So foreign interests are starting to have a say in American politics.
Well, that's exactly right. And it was the foreign interests led by Sony that persuaded the state of California to repeal its unitary tax. Foreign lobbyists are swarming all over the House-Senate Conference on the Trade Bill. Foreign-owned companies had more than 100 PACs in the last congressional campaign, and those PACs raised and distributed more than $2 million, $2.3 million. So they are really becoming involved in the American political process, and I think that's a question that people have to look at.
Yet, states are competing for foreign car plants and other foreign companies, and they're even offering incentives. while competing against each other, to have the companies locate in their states. What is the benefit to a state to have a foreign company set up shop there?
Foreign companies have created 3 million jobs in the United States. They have turned around regions of the country. They have brought prosperity to very hard-pressed regions, and so that it's very inviting to governors and to mayors to have foreign investors in their states. The problem is, there are many problems, but a major problem is that the states vie with each other to attract these foreign investors and give them hundreds of millions of dollars, literally, in tax abatements and highways and job training funds, etc. And so what you have, in effect, is the U.S. taxpayers are subsidizing foreign companies not just to set down roots in the United States, but also to acquire American companies.
Now, you raise the possibility that foreign companies locating in America might actually be keeping wages down, even though they're providing new jobs.
Yes, well, in many cases, foreign companies that locate here have most of their work done back home, and the location here is done mostly as assemblage plants or warehousing, and the better jobs are not in those plants. In addition, foreign companies that locate in the United States have their research and development done back home. There's no need really to have it done here. And so when foreign companies begin acquiring major U.S. companies, the United States as a nation begins to lose its own research and development capacity, which then is transferred back to the corporate headquarters and is done by the foreign nationals. And of course, it's America's research and development capability that has put it at the cutting edge of world technology. And I just saw a story in today's paper that 25% of all the patents applied for last year were applied for by Japanese inventors. And that is an extraordinary change in world patent rights.
When a foreign company is located, has operations in America, and a lot of the profits leave America and go back to the company, to the country that owns the company, what does that mean? What effect does that have on us here?
It's a loss of revenue. It's a loss of money here. And there, too, the initial reports by the Treasury suggest that last year, about $15 billion worth of profits was removed from the United States and sent overseas. And this was roughly twice the amount of profits in 1986. And that's something that's happening in foreign investment. The numbers are doubling and trebling over periods of 3 and 4 years. The amount of investments, the amount of profits, the amount of sales, and it's a surge, and it's a surge really that we don't blame the foreign investors for. We blame Americans. We blame Americans for living above their means. We blame Americans for being so greedy that they can't differentiate between funds that are coming into the United States, for example, from Ferdinand Marcos, who was buying Manhattan real estate, or who purchased Manhattan real estate with foreign aid money that the American taxpayers thought that they were sending down to the Philippines to feed hungry people and to stabilize his government. And we don't care if the money is coming from the Soviet Union in an effort to acquire banks in Silicon Valley to obtain information on high-tech companies out there. We don't care where the money is coming from. We don't care if the money is coming in here to acquire U.S. technology. You know, the late William Casey, the head of CIA, called foreign investment a Trojan horse. We don't care if foreign investors such as Komatsu are coming in here to beat Caterpillar's brains in, coming in here on search and destroy missions against U.S. companies. We don't care if they're coming in here to corner American markets. We don't care where they're coming from. We don't know where they're coming from. We don't know why they're coming. All we want is the money. The money, the money.
Well, I want to ask you why we should care, but let me reintroduce you first. My guest is Martin Tolchin. He's a correspondent in the Washington Bureau of the New York Times and co-author of the new book, Buying Into America, How Foreign Money is Changing the Face of Our Nation. Now, let's get back to an example that you gave. You said that Ferdinand Marcos bought up all this real estate in America with money that he siphoned off from foreign aid that was coming into the Philippines. This was a way of hiding his assets because he didn't admit to owning this real estate. Adnan Khashoggi, the arms dealer, has a lot of...
In Salt Lake City.
Uh-huh. He owns a lot of real estate in Salt Lake City. Now, why should we care? What difference should it make to us in America how the people who got the money and bought American real estate got the money?
Well, I think that we have a stake in a free world, and I think that if foreign dictators... send money back to us that really should be feeding their people and really should be stabilizing their government and really should be a bulwark against the communists, I think it's a very short-sighted view that we don't really care where that money is coming from. That money would far better be served stabilizing their governments than buying Manhattan real estate. And, of course, Marcos is not the only one. Duvalier did the same thing, and many others. And I think that the taxpayers are being cheated. And above and beyond that, I think it's very, very short-sighted to take U.S. funds that are intended to feed hungry people and just let third-world dictators use it for their private means, and really aid and abet them in doing this by giving them all manner of subsidies ourselves.
Is there any way of restricting investment in America and, you know, evaluating how somebody made the money that they're investing here?
Not at present, and I think...
Oh, you're suggesting that there should be?
I'm not sure that there should be, but I think that for openers, we should know what that money is, and there is legislation now pending before the Congress, actually in the trade conference. It was passed by the House and rejected by the Senate. But there is legislation that would require foreign owners to disclose their identity and their holdings, and I think that's a first step, certainly in... really taking a hard look at this situation, which we have absolutely, totally closed our eyes to. We have not wanted to look at it in our pursuit of money.
While we're on the subject of real estate, what effect does it have on the real estate market, on the price of office space and housing when there is a lot of foreign investment buying into real estate?
Well, it can act in many ways. In the South and the Southwest, where Latin Americans purchased real estate, it initially inflated real estate prices by creating a demand, but eventually lowered real estate prices when Latin America suffered a terrible recession and the Mexican government severely limited the amount of money that Mexicans could take out of the country, so that to a certain extent, we're tying our own economy very considerably to the success or failure of other economies. The other thing is, I think, one thing about foreign investors is that they look to long-term, they have long-term goals, where American businessmen very often are really limited to looking at the next quarter, the next 2 quarters. Foreign investors really are looking to the next decade. And there is really a question with the Canadians owning something like 8% of all Manhattan real estate. Real estate is, and land are really considered sort of integral to a nation's ability to control itself. And if we reach the point where our real estate and our land are owned by foreigners, I think it just raises a lot of very serious questions. There are many. Let me put it this way: we are one of the few countries in the world that allows foreigners unlimited access to purchases of real estate.
What kinds of restrictions would you find in other countries? What's an example?
Some totally bar foreigners. Some require that foreigners who purchase real estate have partnerships or have equal partners with citizens of those countries. Those are the kinds of restrictions. They consider land very important. Of course, this country really has benefited from its diversity. Our entire history has been one of openness, and it has stood us in very good stead. And we're a very big country, and we're a very rich country. And the feeling is that things can happen. People can come in here. We don't have to worry about our real estate. We don't have to worry about our industry. We can spend forever. We don't have to worry about our debt. We don't have to worry about $200 billion budget deficits. In a sense, we're a very arrogant country.
Isn't it part of the freedom that we prize ourselves on to let foreign investors invest in America, to not measure the amount of money going out of the country?
Oh, exactly. And the United States' position has always been one of free trade. Of course, that position really stems from the fact that we have been the free traders. We have been going around the world buying up land, buying up companies, influencing political processes, bringing about the downfalls of governments, etc. We have been on the buying end. Today, we are being bought, and that's a little different.
You think we're getting a taste of our own medicine?
Well, we are, and it's not entirely bitter medicine. There are great benefits that we have gotten, and we are a global economy, and we shouldn't be xenophobic, and we shouldn't be jingoistic, but we should realize that there are many aspects and many nuances and many layers and many levels of foreign investment, and we should look at each of them very carefully and not just accept everything or reject everything.
Martin Tulchin is my guest. He's a correspondent in the Washington Bureau of the New York Times. He's co-author with his wife Susan Tulchin of the new book Buying Into America, How Foreign Money is Changing the Face of the Nation. We're going to take a short break, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Martin Tulchin is my guest, author of the new book, Buying Into America. You know, earlier you quoted former CIA head William Casey as saying that foreign investment can be like a Trojan horse. Now, an example that you give of that is a Soviet scheme that was thwarted to buy banks in the Silicon Valley. For what purpose?
To acquire information about the high-tech companies in the Silicon Valley, to acquire information about which of those companies might be in financial distress. And, of course, banks are intelligence sources. You go to a banker to expand your company, and you tell them why you want to expand it. You have a new product you want to develop, and you discuss it with your banker. That was the purpose, really, to get a foothold in Silicon Valley.
How was that scheme thwarted?
This scheme was put together by the Moscow Narodny Bank of Singapore, and they used a Singapore businessman by the name of Amos Daw, who came to California with Moscow Narodny officials and actually made a down payment of several million dollars. I've forgotten how much, maybe $8 or $10 million, we have it in our book, to acquire the banks. And then, of course, took paper for the rest. It was thwarted by a CIA agent in Singapore who was a banker himself, and who noticed the regular dealings of Moscow Narodny and Amos Daw and San Francisco and Silicon Valley, and investigated. It led to an investigation, and then blew the cover of this deal by having it published in an Asian newsletter. And once it was published in an Asian newsletter, Moscow Narodny pulled out, and Mr. Daw was left with a lot of notes and with, as I say, about $8 or $10 million already invested. But the deal was blown.
Do you think it's paranoid to dwell on examples like that? It sounds like a very exceptional example.
The problem is we really don't know where this money is coming from. We know it comes from everywhere. We know a lot of it is underworld money that is laundered, that comes in here. We are considered the greatest recipient of laundered underworld money. We don't know who was buying what. So one never knows. And we do know that, that, as Mr. Casey said, that a prime incentive for foreign investment here is to acquire U.S. technology.
You said a little earlier that you thought we shouldn't be xenophobic about foreign investment. And I wonder if you think that it's a risk we really run right now in looking at foreign investment. Two of the biggest foreign investors, two of the biggest parts of the world, there's Japan, and there's still a lot of negative sentiments in America toward Japan because of World War II. The Arabs have a lot of investments here, and there's a lot of hostility and prejudice toward Arabs in America now. How do you think we should handle this issue so that fear of foreigners isn't part of the issue, so that we keep the kind of American fear of foreigners out and just look at the real hard economic issues?
The biggest foreign investors in the United States are the British, and they started early.
Now, that really surprises me.
They started early, and they've been piling it in, and they own a great deal of downtown Washington. They've been buying it up at a considerable pace, including the Watergate complex, by the way. The next biggest are the Dutch, and they also started early with Peter Minuet. the Japanese have just overtaken the Canadians as the third largest, and then the Canadians, and then the West Germans. We are not really just talking about the Japanese in this book. And I think the question really is a question of really examining this issue. Now, for example, you do have the Saudis taking over Texaco. The British have taken over Standard Oil. Now, when do we become concerned if somebody else starts taking over Amoco or Sunoco or Exxon or whatever? At what point, when we lose 25% of our oil-producing capacity, 50%, 75%, at what point should we become concerned? Similarly, the fourth largest tire producer in the United States right now is a Japanese-owned company, Bridgestone. Bridgestone has just made a deal to acquire Firestone. That's the third largest tire producer in the United States. Now, suppose Bridgestone or another foreign investor from whatever company purchases the second largest tire producer and the first largest. When do we become concerned? When we've lost 50% of our tire producing capacity, 75%, 80%, 90%, all of it? Machine tools. Foreign investors have made a great dent in that. Are there certain basic circulatory system industries that are so important and so crucial to our industrial capacity that we really cannot be in a position of having to go to foreign governments or foreign companies and saying, please sell us oil or please give us tires, we need them for such and such an industry, and then having the foreign governments or the foreign companies saying, well, I'm sorry, but such and such an industry is competing with our industry, and so why should we do it? In other words, at what point do we become vulnerable, or do we not? Should we really take a position of absolutely untrammeled foreign investment, untrammeled free trade, and say if we lose our oil industry, tire industry, machine tool industry, no problem.
Well, what do you think?
I think personally that I think it's important for the United States to have some control over certainly the oil, I think machine tools, I think tire, and I think other things that really are important, not just to national security, but I think are just important to industrial development. And you just cannot find yourself in a position where you have 10% of tire production or 5% of oil production, and you have to go abroad to seek permission to acquire oil or tires or machine tools that are absolutely crucial to the industrial success of this country. That's my own feeling.
One of the new trends now is partnerships between countries. We're seeing this a lot in the auto industry, where an American and a Japanese car company will go into partnership and build jointly made cars in America. What do you think of these partnerships?
I have no problem with the partnerships, as long as we retain sufficient control. I have no problem with that. My problems, such as they are, really are problems of disclosure and of foreign of un, trammeled foreign investment.
Can I ask you to briefly give a sense of the kind of regulations you think America should be considering?
Well, I think for openers, disclosure. I think it's just important to know who is coming in here and why. And we don't know that. We really have just a small portion of the information about foreign investment. And that, incidentally, totals $1.5 trillion at present, of which $1.3 trillion came in since 1974. Every 3 or 4 years, the amount of foreign investment since 74 has doubled in this country. So I think it's important to know who is investing here and why. And I think, of course, Malcolm Forbes has proposed creation of a presidential commission that would be required to approve all foreign investments, all significant foreign investments in this country. And I think it should be studied. Felix Rowett, the investment banker, has said that sooner or later we're probably going to reach the point where the government is going to have to step in and take a very hard look and restrictive look at foreign investments. But at this point, my feeling really is we should know what's happening and we should examine it. And we shouldn't be afraid of being called protectionists, and we shouldn't be afraid of being called Japan bashers. We should really look at all the foreign investment with a very, very cold eye and see, is it coming in? Is it consonant with our interests? Is it going to help build our country? Is it against our interests? Are they coming in really to corner the American market or acquire American technology or beat the brains out of an American company? And I think we just have to really give this whole issue a great deal more scrutiny than it has gotten. All of this has happened. There's been no public debate. There's been no congressional discussion. It is only now beginning to find its way into the media. And it's coming on very strong.
Well, Martin Tolchin, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been New York Times reporter Martin Tolchin, who is the co-author of the new book, Buying Into America, How Foreign Money is Changing the Face of Our Nation. Buying Into America is co-authored with his wife, Susan Tolchin, and it's published by Times Books. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.